Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Jamison Tyone, big strong right-hander for the Cubs. York will take a swing and a miss, strike three, and that's out number two. First strikeout for Tyone.
JMO is awesome. He's such a pro. Every time he takes the ball, we have a chance to win.
Jansen swings and misses, strike three. Tyone has set down seven in a row.
JMO gave us what we needed.
And now the 3-2. Swing and a miss, strike three. High fastball gets him.
You know, he throws strikes. You feel like he's got good stuff. And we knew he had great makeup. And I got the sense with Jamison, he was definitely in that category that he loved Chicago, which I knew before that this was a really appealing place to him.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. We're going to connect with Jamison Tyone in just a little bit, and it is it's fun to do so because
he was very good the other night.
Yeah, and he's had a really good career. I mean he's been excellent with the Cubs, and I think that it's always fun to talk to people when good things are happening.
Well, this
and
year,
hopefully today it happens.
And this year has been tough on him because of injuries.
Yes, yes.
He's missed a couple different stints, and he's come back each time and been focused and prepared and been a guy that has overcome a lot of things. And mentally you couldn't tell because he seems locked in, and he has been a veteran steadying presence at the top of that rotation. And as you head into October for the first time in a long time in Chicago for the Cubs, you feel very good about having him ready to go and stabilize this pitching staff as they prepare for the Padres.
And we have him right now. What a delight to welcome in Jamison Tyone on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Good morning, Jamison. How are you, sir?
Good morning. Good morning. All good here over in Pittsburgh, just getting ready for a day game.
Yeah, that is great. And not just any day game. Hopefully, this is the day game. This is the one where you guys are capable of making sure that you are in the playoffs. This with a win today, you will clinch the wild card spot. Now, we know you want to be at home and you want to play at home. We know the season's not over, but with a little bit of luck here and another good performance, this can really get you where you want to be.
Yeah. I mean, it's exciting. We've put ourselves in a good spot here to punch our ticket to the playoffs. And then once you're in, obviously anything can happen. So we're rolling out a good lineup today. Doesn't look like we're giving guys days off. I think we want to, put our best foot forward and put ourselves in there. And then we can probably worry about lining everything up properly and how we want. It's really exciting, and it's been a fun year to be a part of.
Jamison, you've started 21 games for the Cubs, and the numbers are very good. 10-6 with a 3.93 ERA. You know what they are, but they seem like they don't represent fully what you've accomplished this year because of the way that you've accomplished them. You've had to come back from a couple different injuries and show the kind of perseverance and during the rehab and the patience level and the example you set. How would you describe, number one, what you've been through this year, and secondly, the role that has put you in on this team?
Yeah. I mean, the amount of starts, going through the numbers definitely feels light. And, you know, I hate missing time. I've unfortunately dealt with some injuries earlier in my career, and I feel like, you know, just through the routines and processes as I've gotten older, I've done a really good job of putting myself in a position to be on the field more times than not. So I do take pride in being out there. So it's frustrating. I didn't get to that magical 32 start number as a starting pitcher, but yeah, I mean, I also think on the flip side, you know, dealing with what I've dealt with in the past has kind of put me in this position to learn how to stay sharp when I'm on the IL, whether it's with mental skills training and visualization or, you know, working with the trainers and the strength coaches and finding a way, anytime you have a setback, to just, you know, use it as more like a, how can I come back stronger from this? Why did this happen? What can I fix? What can I get better at? Versus like a kind of a pity party. So yeah, I mean, it's like solving a problem when you get hurt. It's how can I get better? How can I prevent this from happening again? And I feel like we've done a good job of that.
That is that's a really great way of looking at it. Have you shared that with other guys that have been through this? I mean, your experience would probably be a great boost to a lot of players that suffer through that for the first time.
Yeah, I mean, just because I've dealt with different types of injuries throughout my career, yep. Like I do almost have a soft spot for guys that are hurt. Like, I feel like, you know, you can feel very forgotten about. It's a weird place mentally to be. You might feel like you're kind of left out on the team if you're not performing. So I've always kind of gone out of my way to try to reach out to rehab guys and injured guys and, you know, just try to help them along as well. So yeah, that's definitely something I'm always happy to share. And those are conversations that are happening in the weight room and stuff like that.
Let's talk about the postseason for a moment, because you are on the verge of clinching a spot. And Jameson, if there is a 3-game series in as the wild card host of the Padres, what is your expected role? You are a guy that you could look at as starting either of the games, frankly. You could look at yourself coming out of the bullpen, perhaps. I don't know how you would feel about that, but have you discussed that, and what could we expect from Jameson Taillon in October?
Yeah, I mean, just off the top for that first series, I'm really not sure yet. This is like a Bill Belichick answer, but I'm just focused on my next start in Cincinnati. But I know how Counts likes to do things, and he's a great communicator, but I also know he doesn't like to get too far ahead of himself. So, you know, he would never tell me like, oh, you're going to be in the bullpen. And then if, God forbid, if someone got injured, he would feel bad saying like, oh, now you're going to start. So he kind of waits until decisions need to be made to make them. And then he's obviously great at communicating them from there, but I really have no idea. And it's kind of exciting. Like, I don't care. I just want to help and participate and, you know, whatever's needed of me, I'm happy to do it. So there's no ego here. I know how hard it is to get into October. I know there's a lot of great players that don't have those opportunities. So like, I'm just more than happy to just be a part of it.
Really, any role will
answer.
Do. It's a great answer, but I mean,
no, really, yeah. When I was younger, I probably would have cared more, but now it's like, I mean, on the starting side, we've got Cade Horton, who's had one of the best second halves of all time, and then we've got Shota and Boyd, who have been unbelievable for us. So, you know, we've got some great starting pitching options, and you know, I know it's going to take all of us to get to where we want to go. So. For that first series, who knows? And then, you know, going forward, I'm happy to do whatever.
Can we talk about Cade Horton for a second? Because I think you mentioned that, and it's not overstating it. He's had one of the best second halves in history because he's had that kind of success. You know what it's like to be a high draft pick. You were a second overall pick in the first round, and the expectations that come with that. What has he been able to do from your vantage point, having not necessarily made the team out of spring training, called up in May, and then really being remarkably consistent for a young pitcher? That's been the most impressive thing. But what have you seen him do especially that has made this season special?
Yeah. I mean, I think the first thing is that, you know, not starting with the team, going down to AAA, like, just had a great attitude about it all. And I kind of stayed in touch with him while he was down there. And, you know, I was just checking in on what he was working on and focusing on. And like, this dude is so process driven. He took emotion out of all of it. He was so good about like not wondering when he was going to get called up. He understood it was going to happen at some point. stressing and worrying about it wasn't going to do any good. And then once he comes up, you know, just I'll never forget that strikeout of Soto on a changeup that he had just learned. Like, that says a lot about who Cade is. He's just not scared of the big moment. He's not scared to learn and try new things. And then he's had a few, you know, tougher starts in the first half, which I think put him in position to be where he is in the second half. Like, he's so smart. He's so driven. He's, I mean, crazy mature beyond his years that you just knew he was going to learn from those outings and from those mistakes. And here in the second half, you've seen a dude who's fearless, just filling up the strike zone, coming right at you. You know, he's got a four pitch mix. It's tough to game plan against. And I mean, again, like, the coolest thing for me is to sit back and just watch him fill up the zone with strikes. Doesn't matter who he's facing. He's on the attack. And, you know, I love that mentality.
He seems like a very competitive guy. Like, it seems like he's at his best when it matters most. I thought he was really good yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. I agree. And I thought, like, I saw some quotes from Counts too that I loved. Just that first inning was great. Like, I think that's a great experience for him. Ton of foul balls. You know, they were putting some pressure on him, and a really long sit. Skeens had a really long first inning there. We did a great job of putting pressure on him. So just like between the long sit and then going out there and being challenged with a ton of foul balls and stuff, I thought the ability for him to just stay in the strike zone, keep executing pitches, like, I thought it was absolutely awesome.
Jameson, we talk to Tommy Hyatt every other week here on the show, and we talk to him regularly about the bullpen and how good it has been and how the Cubs seem to have a knack for taking guys who, maybe you can relate to this and help us understand it better, starting pitchers who no longer are starting pitchers, and they go into the bullpen and they succeed and excel despite the role, which is really kind of undefined. Last night, Kittredge comes in the seventh. He had been working the ninth. Brad Keller, eighth inning, ninth inning, he's the same guy. Pomerantz, you look at the other examples, and they're guys who have accepted their roles. How difficult is that for a veteran in those situations to do what they're doing?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of my favorite things about our bullpen is, like, we have a lot of veterans out there, and a lot of them have been starters. A lot of them have that pitch ability. They throw a ton of strikes. It's just, like, the most chill, low-maintenance group, and then when the lights are on, they're animals out there. So they've been fun to watch. And that's, you know, like you said, I think sometimes with veterans you might expect things. Maybe you get some egos or something, but with veterans who are, like, happy to be on a really good team and be in a position to contribute to a really good team, like, our bullpen, I haven't heard a bad word out of any of their mouths all year about usage or when they're pitching. Like, it's literally just a group that shows up ready to go, you know, and trying to contribute. So yeah, I've been blown away. This is the best bullpen group I've ever been a part of, and just watching them, you know, go about their work and pick each other up and stuff has been extremely rewarding.
What do you think of Tommy? What's your relationship like with Tommy Hotovy? As David said, we talk to him all the time. I'm always learning stuff from him. Really enjoy his perspective. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Tommy. You know, just walks that perfect fine line of former player who also is extremely forward thinking and open to new ideas, open to learning, doesn't think he has all the answers. Like, there's no ego. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun, and this is year three for me. So it's been really cool to just grow with him, and you know, we've really learned how we like to work together. So it could be something little, like Tommy knows what I like to hear in a pregame meeting, or he knows exactly what my strengths are to different hitters, or he knows exactly what time I do my pregame routine at, or what time I like to throw my bullpens at for day games. Like, the little things, like, we're just in step together now. So that's been a lot of fun. And then just learning and growing with him and watching him evolve and become the best version of himself as a pitching coach has been awesome. And on the side too, he's just a great dude away from the field. Like, we love talking about our card collections and TV shows and little stuff like that.
And the Chiefs, of course, the Chiefs.
And the Chiefs. Well, yeah, I might talk some smack on the Chiefs just to keep things light.
Before we let you go,
Mahomes on my fantasy team though.
Hey, it's his birthday.
It's his birthday. He's 30 today. Yeah. He's getting older. Mm. Jameson, before we let you go, if you indeed celebrate today or whenever it seems like it's inevitable that you will, how do you envision that celebration going? And in terms of, like, there's more to accomplish, and yet it means something that you guys are going to be in the postseason for the first time in a while here in Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think anytime you have a chance to celebrate, you should. And especially with this group, like, it really is such a veteran focused, driven, you know, process oriented group to where, like, we can pop bottles today and then show up tomorrow and just lock it in and go about our work or whenever it happens. You know, I think sometimes you see teams who are wary about celebrating too early or whatever, because they might get comfortable. It's like with this group, that's not something we need to worry about. So I think you celebrate whenever you have the chance. You know, it's hard to make it to the playoffs. It's hard to make it to the postseason. So it's, you know, it's a long season. We all go through a lot. Like, I think it's worth celebrating together with all the guys that you've been through the fight with. So, yeah, I mean, whenever it does happen, it's going to be a lot of fun. And then obviously everyone's just going to lock it back in.
Great stuff, Jameson. Thanks a ton. Great catching up with
thanks
you.
Thanks so much.
Yes, thank you. Have a good one.
You
that
too.
Is Jameson Taillon. What, like, first of all, what a mature guy. What a teammate. What a team-oriented guy, you know, what a pro.
It's experience talking.
That's
he
right.
has been through a lot in
That's
his career, right. come back from injuries, and still the stabilizing force on that pitching staff. So you'd like to see him have success.
No, I want him to start game one.
I want him to start game two.
Okay.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
We now go live to the Circa Sports Hotline. Download the Circa app today. That is where we find Danny Parkins. Is Danny on Twitch today? I can't see him yet because of the delay. Are you on Twitch with us, Danny?
Yeah.
Okay. Twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. We operate on a Twitch delay, so I can't just say it right away. There he is. We see you now, Danny
Parkins.
I see
you, Danny. I see you. I see you and I see you, Danny.
Yeah, that well, opened, I mean, that if, open if, was up.
If Robbie would tell you guys ahead of time that I was on Twitch, you wouldn't need to
Danny,
wait for
Danny, come device. On, man. Don't throw me under the bus like that.
Come on, Robbie. Get it together.
You're my dad, Danny.
Yeah, that's your adult child.
That's why I'm so disappointed.
Well,
yeah. Let me down, Pop.
We are happy to see Danny. Twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. I will say Robbie edited a very good open for you this week because that is the case. This is not a place where we have not been before at 0-2. And like you said, some flashes out of the quarterback. Let's start there. What did you see week to week out of Caleb Williams in this one?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the analysis that he was better week two than week one was accurate. I also thought that, like, it made me feel a little bad for Caleb Williams, as crazy as that sounds, because I get it. And honestly, I am now more a part of the problem that I am about to speak out against, because in the national landscape, it is all so quarterback centered. But, like, if there ever was a week where the analysis should not be about Caleb Williams, it probably should be in the week where the defense allowed over 50 points to the Lions. Like, the Lions have been playing football for a long time. And in terms of a yards per play basis, that was the best offensive game in the history of their franchise. So, I mean, there was no pressure. There were no sacks. There were a ton of penalties. The defensive line was bad. The linebackers were bad. The secondary was bad. The defense is injured. Jameson Williams and Jahmyr Gibbs and Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jared Goff, they could do whatever they wanted. And Caleb Williams doesn't play cornerback. So I'm not trying to, like, skirt your question, but it didn't feel like a particularly relevant data point for me on is Caleb the guy or not, because the defense was so atrocious. That doesn't escape him from film review or conversation. But like, if I made a list of top five biggest problems with the Bears in that game, he's not cracking the top three.
This is that classic look at us meme. How do we get here? Because you and I, my friend, are aligned on this point. The 8.1 yards per play, by the way, that's the most the Bears have ever given up in franchise history in a game. So their worst defensive performance by that metric, at least. Okay, so do you see a way the Bears can fix this defense? Because I can't. I wanted to find a way the Bears could win this game against the Cowboys. I can't. Unless Caleb goes hero ball, I can't see it.
Well, they can win because the Cowboys defense is bad too. Like, games are won 38-28 all the time, right? Like, when Deron Bland got hurt for the Cowboys, all of a sudden Russell Wilson turned into, you know, prime Aaron Rodgers, and he was connecting on every one of his moon balls. Like, the Bears can win. So I had my guy pull these numbers for us here. Caleb last year against bottom 10 defenses in the NFL had a 10-3 touchdown to interception ratio, a passer rating of 99, and had over 250 yards, total yards per game. Cowboys are 27th right now in opponents' points per game this year. Quarterbacks against the Cowboys so far: Jalen Hurts completed 82.5% of his passes for 2 touchdowns and no picks, a passer rating of 94. Russell Wilson completed 73% of his passes for 473 yards and a passer rating of 123. Cowboys are 30th in the NFL in opponent passer rating this year. So you can't win this game 19-14, but you can absolutely win this game 31-28. So that's the only recipe for a win. And I think that if Caleb and the Bears offense and Ben Johnson do not look good on Sunday, that's when it's time for alarm bells to really start going.
I just want to make sure I heard you correctly. You said 10-3 touchdown to interception ratio against the bottom 10 defenses for Caleb last year.
That's right.
Well, he was 10-3 with the top 22. I mean, he had 20 touchdowns.
Yeah, he's 20-6.
So like, either way, that number just rang very hollow to me. But I hear you. I hear you.
Fine. Passer rating of 99. The Bears scored 25 points per game. Those were both above their averages. Point was is that Caleb Williams, you know, listen, last year was an inconsistent year. You're correct. He finished with 20-6 touchdown to interception ratio. That is absolutely correct. But in terms of Caleb Williams last year was streaky. Would we agree on that?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Right? Like he had a very good game against Minnesota where he had 340 yards and 2 touchdowns and no picks, and they scored 27 and they lost in overtime. And then he didn't have a good game against Minnesota, right? He was a streaky, inconsistent player over the course of last year. And I thought that week one of this year felt a little bit too much like a continuation from last year. Week two this year was better. But again, I throw out the better. Like, I don't want to give him a bunch of flowers for how he played week two. I know a lot of people were doing that based on the film review, and that's fine. But they got boat raced. Like, that game just wasn't about the quarterback, good, bad, or indifferent.
No, and I feel you, Danny. I also love that you have the Fox Research Department at your fingertips, because those people do work. Like, that is one of the greatest parts about working at that level. So thank you for sharing the stats. I also want to ask you this, though, is I feel like the metric now for measurement has become the Packers are making people look so silly that now you're having to figure out what you can base based off of that. Because that was really, if you're looking at it, I think maybe from your standpoint, like, national host, not necessarily Danny Perkins from Chicago, it's probably that the Lions looked that good because that was more like what you expect to see than what you saw out of them with the Packers, who were just making very good offenses look inept.
Yeah, I think that there's some truth to that. And like, the Lions, you know, I tend to give teams that have been good for a while the benefit of the doubt. And the Lions have been really good now for a few years. Like, I remember when the Chiefs won the Super Bowl, and then the following year, they opened with the Lions at Arrowhead and dropped their banner, and then the Lions got them. Like, and that was the opener 2 years ago. So the Lions have been really good for a while. So I thought week one in Green Bay, Micah Parsons making his debut, first game for a new defensive coordinator for Detroit, first game for a new offensive coordinator for Detroit, first game with, you know, the new pieces and rearrangement of their, guard center guard combination. Like, I just thought the Detroit ran into a little bit of a buzzsaw in week one. And the Bears were certainly a get right for them. But my guess is the Lions at the end of the year are going to be a double-digit win team with a top five offense in the sport. So I do think that Detroit is going to be just fine. And to your point, Layla, like so far, Green Bay looks like the best team in football. As disgusting as that is, like they're probably going to make a lot of people look bad. Jaden Daniels played the worst game of his career against Green Bay last Thursday, a week ago today. So yeah, Green Bay looks like they've stepped up a notch, but I don't think that Detroit has stepped that much backwards just because of how they played week one.
Danny Parkins joining us here on Raheemy, Harris, and Grody, talking all things Bears right this second, because I do want to know, how concerned are you? Because I'm very concerned that these draft picks that were supposed to be guys who make an impact, I don't know, second rounders, aren't playing. They're just healthy scratches. Are you concerned?
I mean, it's obviously a terrible look. There's no sugarcoating it. It's a terrible look for Ryan Poles. And I think judging Luther Burden off of two games into his rookie year is probably very silly. The Colston Loveland one is the one that is the most inexplicable for Ben Johnson, because, you know, they draft him in the top 10. They draft him ahead of Tyler Warren. They say he's a better fit with Komet. Ben Johnson ran all that 12 personnel in Detroit with two tight ends on the field. Wasn't the first play of the first preseason game with the starters like a designed play to Loveland? I thought that Loveland was going to be a much bigger piece of the offense from Jump Street, and I still think he likely will be. But Loveland's the one that I expect to be involved. The other guys, you know, I know Burden was a little bit behind from training camp with the injury, and Zacchaeus is more of a veteran. So, you know, I'm not again sounding any panic bell alarms on that, but you know, the lineman not playing is bad. The Torrey Taylor being drafted ahead of Bucky Irving is bad. You know, it's obviously the draft picks so far. I mean, hell, at this point, Caleb Williams being drafted ahead of Jaden Daniels is really, really bad, if we're being totally honest here, in terms of they didn't do a full evaluation of Jaden relative to Caleb. So yeah, Ryan Poles, is his draft picks are aging very poorly at the moment.
Curious, Danny, have you gotten a chance to read the Seth Wickersham book?
No, I have not. I have not read the book. I read the Caleb excerpt, though. I read the Caleb chapter, if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, what I mean, and that's, you know, I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I was just wondering out loud.
That's what I'm here for. What do you got?
Yeah, but what did you think?
I mean, listen, I think that Caleb is the product of a very specific moment in time. Like, he's been the best prospect at basically since he started playing quarterback, right? Seventh, eighth grade, all the way through. He's got a very smart, very accomplished dad who has his own money. And so they were able to move Caleb and follow coaches, not just Lincoln Riley, but, you know, Caleb living in an apartment for his prep school and the whole thing, right? So like, then he's a multi-millionaire before he even enters the NFL. He had a foundation. He has a foundation. I still have never seen that, like pre-Caleb, post-Caleb. Like, he came into the NFL with an established, up and running for multiple years charitable foundation. Like, he's a different type of cat, for better and worse. And so I think that they wanted to push the envelope in a lot of different ways, monetarily, team-wise, city-wise, coach-wise, and they were trying to see exactly how much power they could have. And so I thought it was well reported. I thought it was compelling. I didn't come away from it thinking like that the Bears like stepped in it, though, if that makes sense. Like, they looked at the film and said that Caleb Williams was the best quarterback in that class. That's what they wanted to draft him. And I think that it ultimately, that's how you want your general manager to be operating. And we're going to see if they ended up getting it wrong, because the early returns are they got it very wrong. But I still think Caleb's ceiling is MVP of the league. Like, I haven't sold any Caleb Williams stock. So that's where I think the conversation gets a little muddied. Like, Jaden Daniels has been much better than we thought, but I don't think that Caleb Williams is off track necessarily.
I look, Danny, at the way things have gone for the Bears, and I'm thankful that we have the Cubs that exist so that we can kind of like say, okay, let's
backwards.
Take our eyes off of this for a moment and look at this instead. What do you think about the Cubs clinching in their pursuit now of a playoff run?
Well, I mean, I know that they're very happy. I was texting a few of my people over there, congratulations, like front office, council, Nico, people like that. You know, I know they're very happy. I know they're planning for more celebrations and hoping for more celebrations. And it was fun to see. They deserved it. I was obviously like personally happy for council. You know, the reality of baseball, though, is that they could win the World Series or they could get swept in the first round. Like that is unfortunately now the reality of baseball. Like, can they get hot? So like I texted all of them. I was like, congrats on the celebration. Looked fun. Now go get hot. Because that's the truth of it. Like, and there's of course strategy that comes into play and all of the decisions are magnified. You know, when are you going to start Cade Horton and what's going on with Kyle Tucker? And, you know, how early do you go to the bullpen and where are you going to bat Nico in the lineup against lefties and righties? And like all of the things that you guys are debating in the nitty gritty every day. But then you're going to ultimately be doing the analysis of a really small sample size of maybe 12 at bats for a guy or one start for a pitcher or one bullpen appearance for a reliever. And it's inherently unfair, but that's what they've signed up for. Like the ultimate sample size sport gets bogged down to the ultimate randomization of the baseball playoffs. So it, to me, as a now somewhat removed observer, I can like just sit back with a glass of wine and sweat it and watch it and be a little bit of a meatball on it. But like the reality is that we'd all be better served to do it because they got into the dance and now we see how it goes. Like that's the cold hard truth of it, is that now the randomization of baseball, it's almost like their fate is no longer in their hands.
We're talking to Danny Parkins. You know him well. He's over at Fox Sports One now on the Score. And I bring up Fox Sports One because you were a voice of reason.
That was the Bear, by the way, from Big Noon Kickoff. Bear just walked in.
Oh, no way. I also see a football play drawn up behind you.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. People are always coming through. Maybe Eric Mangini or Greg Jennings or Jeff Schwartz or Willie Colon. I don't know. There's always people walking around here. Sorry to name drop, but that was the Bear.
I love that. That's great. And I know we talked to you about Robbie, your large adult child, but in some ways I think that you might be a son of Colin Cowherd when it comes to like takes and just, you know, the basis of talk radio hosting. And that's why I ask you, what was his, when he was discussing timing and whether or not Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson were a good fit and how it wasn't. I just was not there yet. I saw that you tempered that a little bit when you guys got to mix and crosstalk a little bit. What was your takeaway from what he had to say?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I when I saw the take, I pulled out my phone to yell at him via text message. And then I was like, or I could just do this on national TV, 400 radio stations. And so I just invited myself on the show to kind of spar it out with him. Listen, Colin is a passionate, wildly talented, occasionally prisoner of the moment reactionary. Like and it's brilliant. Like Colin will have a very strong take that Ben Johnson is not the right fit for Caleb Williams. And he will do a great Colin Cowherd analogy to sell you on it. And then if Caleb Williams throws for four touchdowns against the Cowboys and then he backs it up with a game against the Raiders, he'll be like, well, it's going to work. I got new information. And
very convenient.
It's a very healthy way to live. Like I've never met anyone less bothered by being wrong. So he's the best. Like he's the best. And so you know, I obviously disagree with him. I obviously thought it was premature. I said as much when I went on. And I don't think that Ben Johnson, who interviewed in Washington and Seattle, in LA, and was on the short list in all these other places, like, I don't think he took the Bears job to two games in, go to the kid from Shepherd. Like, I just don't believe it. Like, I don't think that he's like, in one hand, I have 6'3", 227, rocket arm, best player in his class for the last 10 years, Heisman Trophy winner. And on the other hand, I have Tyson Bagent. I'm going to just bench the kid. Like, I don't think we're even anywhere near it. I think it's a Twitter creation of a story. And I think that Ben Johnson, I'm sure he's a little frustrated with Caleb from time to time, no doubt. I think he's been coaching him hard. And I think it's going to be a process, and progress isn't linear and all of those cliches. But like, this idea that like Ben Johnson is fed up with Caleb Williams after two games, that just, I don't think that that's like based in any sort of facts.
Yeah. I was a bit taken aback by that one. I was like, the man knows how to craft a take, but
it was a great take.
I can't join him on the island.
Listen, Colin is arguably the best to ever do this. Like his Mahomes take after Chiefs Eagles, where it was like, How did he say it? He said, Patrick Mahomes is like the Apple store at the mall to the Chiefs offense. He's the only thing keeping the lights on. I was like, that is so good. Like that is so great to talk about, like the running backs and the receivers and the coaching and the defense not getting any turnovers. Like he's like, it's the Apple store in the mall. It's the only thing keeping the lights on. I'm like, that is brilliant. Or when he talks about another one that I love that he says now is he says he's in the omelet business, not the egg business. His job isn't to make you interesting. His job is to talk about you once you've become interesting. Like, that is unbelievable. I love Colin Cowherd. He is so good at it. And so if the Bears were on like the wrong side of one of his takes, like that's just the price of doing business. I got no problem with it.
Well, Danny Parkins, we appreciate you joining us. And I'll make sure to ask Robbie next time sooner if you're on Twitch or not.
No, that's not on you. That's not on you.
Oh, we know.
Danny, I have this on file.
Robbie Triano, you're excellent. You're going to be a star.
So I have that in the system. So I just want to let you know.
That's a good comeback right there. That's a good clap back right there.
I could give you other drops.
All right, thanks for coming on, Danny. You're great.
Buy a nicer shirt.
Oh no!
Act like it's a place of business.
Love you.
Be an adult.
See that's the parent. That's the parenting I'm here for. Danny, thanks for joining us.
I was special teaming it up all during the week.
Patrick Manily.
My all-time favorite Bear would have to be Patrick Manily.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Bears long snapper for 16 seasons.
Manley is the long snapper, and they fake it. And it's Maynard, the holder, and he fires the pass, and it's caught for the touchdown. Ryan Urlacher on the reception. Pretty good imagination.
Craft beer mogul.
Are you drinking the Kool-Aid?
I'm drinking a long snapper IPA.
Patrick Manley.
This is a city where you can't snow people about special teams.
No, we know it. We had Dave Tobe for a long time. Mm-hmm. We know what good special teams are. We got Pat Manley on this radio station. We know what we're supposed to see.
There we go. Fuck.
What happened to my mother? What are you, shut me off here, Alex? You never know when I'm going to talk. Just leave this thing on. What was I saying? Oh, Pat Manley. Yeah, talk to Pat about that. How much I respect Pat. I would love to hear Pat's thoughts on...
Hey, look, we'll talk to him, all right? Yeah, don't worry, Coach.
Let me know.
We'll talk to him. We'll get back to you on that.
Patrick Manley with Spiegel and Holmes.
And a ton of stuff. Of course, the Manley snap.
On 670 The Score.
And you should
take note that we do have a dry erase board for Coach. So today would be a great day where you should watch what we're doing on Twitch. Just something to keep in mind. Twitch.tv/Chicago670thescore. In fact, you can see Patrick Manley's handsome face right there if you log on. He joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. CircaLasVegas.com is where you can find our guy, Patrick Manley. Hello, Patrick. How are you?
I'm good. I'm getting over my Bears hangover a little bit. Getting excited for the Cowboys. Started to watch a little bit of tape, but still upset with an 0-2 start and the way it's definitely looked.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean,
your passion and your anger was evident in post-game and evident in hearing you on the station earlier in the week. I'm glad that you're processing it and you've kind of been able to move on a little bit. Has Ben Johnson's talk this week helped you move on a little bit? It was big news yesterday when he called out the practice habits for players publicly and said, we do not have the practice habits of a championship caliber team. That was really good to hear, and you assume the players have heard it directly, Pat. That's good.
Yeah, I've got no problem if a coach uses the media to get a message across to the players, but he has to do it the right way. One, you have to have respect to your players, and I think he has that just being the new coach right now, and I like the way he's delivering it. You know, some people said when he called out Cairo Santos not kicking it out of bounds after the first game, kicking it out of the end zone, hey, he's calling him out. No, he's just saying he needs to do his job. To me, that's all he's doing, and I kind of like it. Different coaches have done that. You know, position coaches have done that. Head coaches have done that. Some have done it a little secretively, but I don't mind the way he's doing it. He has the right to do that right now. He's setting a tone for his team, and I've got no problem with it whatsoever.
Can you tell people about when the inverse was true for you? I thought of you right away in terms of a coach not telling you, the players, the truth.
Well, I mean, it goes back to it was when you and I were working together, Speaks. I was fed up in 14 after playing under Mark Trestman for 2013, that he would tell us after a practice, you know, that's the best practice we've had. He would go out to the media and say we had a great practice. And I'm looking around, I'm like, that's one of the worst practices I've ever seen. And what all he was doing was letting that standard slip. And he just kept letting it slip. And us veterans were looking at each other, I'm like, this isn't right. You can't say that was a good practice. You know, I'm going to go there. But you can't do that. The real players and the professional players that really care about their team and their game, they know what the standard is. So that happened bad in 2013, and I sat there for maybe 10 weeks with you in 2014 and was just stewing on that. And you could see that happening with the team. As bad as they were playing, everybody pointing fingers, Brandon Marshall yelling at Robbie Gould after a game, you knew that was imploding. And I was like, this is what's happening. I finally had to let it out. That was what was happening at Palace Hall, and you can't have that. And it seems like Ben Johnson right now is taking control of that. He is setting that standard. And I like that. And it's okay. Like I said, I'm going to say it again. It's okay that he's using the media right now.
Our segment with Patrick Manley is sponsored by Great Clips. It's going to be great. We've been asking all of our pros this week, what does a good practice look like? So we've got someone who played for almost two decades.
Yes.
For you, when you look at practice or practice tape, what should it look like? And what's the individual responsibility of each player before and after they get on the practice field?
Well, I think the first thing is energy. You can feel it as soon as you walk out there. You know when the entire team is ready to go. You can tell during stretch. You can tell during pre-stretch. You can tell in the locker room. It's just kind of set up in meetings before. I'm just going to keep going back. Are guys paying attention in meetings and ready for the details? Are they honed in on whatever specific game plan they're working on, say, against the Cowboys, Lions, or whoever they're playing? But as far as going out to practice, it's energy. You can feel it. It's tangible. You can sense it. And then it's carried on into individual drill. Is that energy in each individual drill? And then you start, you know, different 7-on-7 and team things like that. And once you get the team in 7-on-7 and the team drills, it's details. Everything is done properly. The other one is everybody's holding other teammates accountable. You're not jumping off sides. You're lined up properly. Motion is correct. On defense, are you hiding your coverages? Are you rolling your coverages? Everything detail specific, and you know that. There's no coach saying, hey, run that again. Hey, yelling at a certain player. Stay on sides. Think about this. They're not really yes, they're coaching, but they're not coaching the details. Everything is done right. And then the other thing is, guys, players are holding each other accountable. And I talked about in the post game and maybe the other day that, you know, it's on the players for jumping off sides. It's not on the coaches. Little things like that. So you know a good practice with the energy and everybody's holding each other accountable. And the coaches, they're just installing. They don't have to coach. Players can coach each other.
Well, think about that. Like, if you got the players holding each other accountable and the standards are what they are, then the coaches are freed to think conceptually, Lawrence. The coaches are freed to go next level and really get somewhere. You can get somewhere special, Pat.
Speaks, they can trust their players, right? They can trust they can put in an extra motion. They can trust they can add, like, an extra call to a play. They can trust you're not going to jump off sides. They're going to trust you're going to be in second and two or second and five, not first and 15. So there's a trust thing that you can – well, I mean, the greatest example is, you know, putting in trick plays. That comes in later in the year, right? That's after you've established yourself, say, offensively, that you trust your players. Hey, okay, we can take 5 minutes out of this practice, and we can install Santa's sleigh. You know, we can put in a fun play like that. And have, you know, going back to Matt Nagy, you can put in a fun play like that. And that's what happens. You trust your players. That, hey, we've got all the little things down. We've got the X's and O's down, the basics down. Let's have some fun. And that comes in later on during the season. But, yeah, the coaches can actually really just coach schematically and then trust guys are going to be in position, run the right motion, stay on side, all that kind of stuff.
Before Chicago takes on Dallas, tune in Sunday morning from 9 until noon for your local Ford dealers pregame show right here on 670 The Score. Mully, Olin, and Patrick will get you set for the game. Then immediately following the game will be Mully, Olin, and Pat. They'll have instant reaction on the postgame show, which is presented by TimberTech Decking and Railing and Arturo Tires. All of it can be heard on The Score and the Odyssey app. I wanted
hold on, Lawrence, let me go. I got something while you're doing that. I was just thinking, Speaks, I want to go back to your question about a good practice. So it just popped in my head. Like on Friday practice, we would start with special teams. And that's why I go back to energy. We started the practice. So I'm like, guys, we have to have the energy when guys are coming out later that aren't on special teams. They see that we're practicing hard, we're being a little loud, being obnoxious or whatever, that we have to do like that. That's the way it has to be. So when I would call the guys up in pre-practice, all the special teamers are out there, and you could kind of feel there was an energy. And I'd always say, false enthusiasm is better than no enthusiasm. Ha. Let's go blank and fake it. And people would, you know, it would just fake it, right? And you fake the false enthusiasm, becomes enthusiasm. Guys are walking out in the field. They're like, holy crap. The special teams is getting after it. They're having fun. They're getting to the ball. They're doing whatever. And that's what I was a big believer in. Energy starts practice.
I know that you're not in that particular locker room. And we know that you've been in a leadership role in locker rooms before. I wonder about this particular group of players. And there have been additions here and there. I wonder if they look and they're like, well, we ran the last coach out of here. We kind of did whatever we wanted to do last year. How can the message organizationally get through to them? Because I think Ben's doing all the things that one would want to see a coach do, where it's, I'm going to say it to him privately. I'm going to say it to him publicly. If guys aren't getting that message, is that just a matter of you've got the wrong guys in the locker room?
Yeah. It starts with leadership. It's got to trickle down from the head guys. You know, I just go back to Olin, Urlacher, Lance, Peanut, all those guys that we all followed them, right? Those were the true leaders. So you need leaders that you follow that buy into, say, the head coach and whatnot. But it also goes to the position coaches. You spend so much time in those position rooms and you're trusting your position coach, O-line coach, linebacker coach, whatever. You want them to make you better. If they're not making you better, that's when you kind of lose trust in your coaches, your head coaches, because your head coach is the one that hired that coach. But it is on the players. It is on the players to have them hold each other accountable and to buy into the system. But if those coaches aren't good, they get called out quickly. And then that's when stuff starts going downhill. And that's what happened in 13 with Trestman. There were some guys on that staff that just – weren't as talented as assistant coaches that I've seen in the past, and guys kind of lost trust in them.
Pat Manley here with us on Spiegel and Olms on 670 The Score. Pat, I'm trying to figure out what Ben might do to get this running game going. And, you know, maybe there's more usage of Kyle Manungai. Maybe it's score and game situation to get enough calls going. But now we're back at home. The Bears are back at home. I saw a lot more shotgun formation and shotgun runs for DeAndre Swift in game two on the road than I did in game one at home against the Vikings. Was that about a home road swap? Was it about Swift comfort, Caleb comfort? Do you think we'll see more under center back home this week?
I wonder about the cadence as well. You know, the silent count, you know, with the head bob and all that kind of stuff to be able to get off the ball. It's a little bit harder if you are under center because you don't have the center doing the head bob and you don't have the you know, just the cadence that's set up that way in the shotgun that you can go silent. The other one is, too, Ben Johnson said it. He's going to tailor this offense to Caleb. And this, I know you're talking about DeAndre Swift, but this is only game two with this entire offense out there. And I wonder how much he's kind of morphing this offense and figuring out what is best for these guys. But as far as the run game, I think that's kind of the reason. And I think he's trying both to see what is best for DeAndre Swift. I thought he ran the ball a little bit better in the second game. But at home, you can do whatever you want with cadence, and that can help the run game as well, being under center.
When you look at Dallas on tape, what do you see?
Matt Eberflus's defense struggling, obviously, against Russell Wilson, but a lot of mental mistakes, a lot of blown coverages, a lot of big plays, a lot of pointing, doing this and the, you know, their arms up, like what's going on in the defensive backfield. It seems like they're still running that system. So I think there is potential for big plays in Caleb. And what I want to see, guys, this is start 20 for Caleb Williams. It's time for him to take ownership. It's time for us to see us winning games because of Caleb Williams. It's time for us to see, hey, you know, if we give up, let's not say 52 points, but we give up 30 points, let's score 34 points and win the game because of Caleb Williams. It's start 20. He's the first pick in the draft. It's time for him to take ownership and us to be talking about not his improvement, but about wins because of Caleb Williams. And I think this defense is potentially this weekend we could see that.
Patrick, you are the absolute best. We appreciate.
I'd like to say, if you love football, you had to love this practice. This was a vicious practice, a highly competitive practice.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like the pact between coach and player is destroyed when you lie with them there. I always
you can't
think
lie. Just be honest. No. It's okay to call a player out. I like what I'm hearing from Ben Johnson.
I always think of the time when I told Ruben he was really brave getting his vaccinations from the doctor. Ruben, you were really brave today. And he said, no, I wasn't. I was like, yeah, actually, you're right.
You called out. You called out. The honesty's there, man.
Yeah, man. And, and you deserve to get called out. So.
Yep.
Thank you, Patrick.
All right, guys. Have a great day.
You don't do what you do. Show the world your gift. Show the world all your hard work. They strapped up all day.
Jalen Johnson, the no.
Jalen Johnson.
Jalen is a premier player.
Starting cornerback for your Chicago Bears.
Jalen Johnson.
Yeah, he's nice too, boy. He's nice with it.
Oh yeah.
Two-time Pro Bowl selection.
Picked off by Jalen Johnson. Johnson, untouched for the touchdown.
2023 All-Pro.
Problem was he threw that. The one guy you don't want to go attacking man-to-man, Jalen Johnson.
Well, and it's a little bit of the Deion Sanders effect when you're playing opposite of Jalen Johnson.
Takes you inside the locker room after every Bears game.
Goff and third and 10, it's dropped. St. Brown, Johnson may have gotten a piece of it.
Jared Goff going to his main man, Amon-Ra St. Brown, and there is Jalen Johnson gets just enough on it. Amon-Ra had both hands on it. Ends up with the incompletion or pass breakup from Jalen Johnson, and unfortunately, Jalen is still on the ground.
Jalen Johnson with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
Getting ready to check in with Jalen Johnson. He's going to join us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. CircaLasVegas.com. As you can imagine, probably a rough day for Jalen, considering the team got destroyed and he's likely out for the rest of the season.
Man, we'll give him a chance to speak on that as he sees fit. I'm pleased to be resuming our relationship with him. That play that you heard Jonathan Vilma break down, man, was like, oh, here we go. Jalen on Amon-Ra making a great play. And you're like, well, whatever happened earlier, at least here he is now on that man. But then with no Jalen, Amon-Ra found himself with a lot of room and a lot of comfort and three touchdowns.
Yeah, it was a really good day for Detroit's offense. Not a great day for the Bears defense. And now Jalen joins us here on The Score. Jalen, thanks for joining us. What can you tell us about your injury and whether or not we will see you play for the rest of the year?
So my injury is kind of complex. I'd say, of course, as I've spoken to before, I partially tore my adductor off my pelvic bone. So pretty much with that being a groin injury, there's a lot that goes into the groin area. Of course, you have your leg, your hip flexors, you have your adductors, things like that. And then you also, and that's from like your leg side going into that pelvic bone connection. And then from the other side, you have your core muscle. That's where like you have your psoas and all your other core muscles and things like that that attach to that pelvic bone as well. So I know when I first tore my adductor off of my pelvic bone, that in itself was, it sounds worse than what it really is. I know that's part of the operation or surgery they do when they repair like sports hernias and things like that. Of course, it was painful and you got to rehab it or whatever and get it back strong. But for me now, I feel like with that being the case, I feel like the other side of it, the top part of it, was compromised. And now that's kind of what is affected now. So I think it's kind of just everything as a whole in that whole region just needs to get, I would say, repaired, and kind of just trying to figure out where I want to go from there. Of course, through time, trying to see what's the best option, who's the best option, what that looks like, the timelines and things like that. So I'm kind of all trying to figure it out myself.
So when you think about the idea of doing surgery, like, do you talk to other players that maybe have done something similar and who they would recommend if that's the choice that you make?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I think as far as guys in the NFL, we all kind of go to the same people. So, I mean, I've talked to some guys with the Bears, talked to some other guys outside the building, of course, and just trying to see who knows what and who knows who. The end of the day. So, I mean, I've gotten a lot of good recommendations. I've gotten some guys that, or a guy that has done a lot of players that have the same injury as myself. So I'm just going to really dive into some other opinions and really just try to make the best decision.
Jalen, are you bummed out? We're bummed out. Like, you know, how you feel at this moment to have your season in jeopardy?
How do I feel? Honestly, I'm still
Oh, we lost him. Right? That's that is the
universal sign for we just disconnected with someone. He didn't want to talk about feelings.
Not that he
does. Want to talk about hospital procedures.
I think he does.
Spiegel and Holmes.
I'm just saying, Lawrence, you were saying some stuff last week, if my memory is correct.
That's why Danny left.
Afternoons on the Score.
Now that we have gone lo-fi with the, because we like to go hi-fi. People like to see Jalen, like, but since we've got technical issues, we had to go back old school sports radio and just get him on the phone. So Jalen Johnson is here. Speaks, you were asking Jalen,
how are you bummed out, or what's your state of mind right now about this injury, Jay?
You know, I think overall I'm in a positive space. I think, of course, when you put in so much time, put in so much effort, of course it hurts when you looking pretty much for your season to be ended. And it's not ideal. I put in an extreme amount of work and preparation, but I feel like, too, at the same time, is I never question why God is doing something. I think for me it's just committed to that, and I think there's ample opportunity for me to fall into the wrong mental space, and I won't do anything but size hurt me, hurt my family, hurt my future, hurt my team. So for me, I'm just really focused on what's right now in the moment. And right now I'm being taken away from the game for a little bit. So whatever that looks like, I just have to really recommit, find myself in a different way. And then really just keep going from there and attack each and everything, whether that's rehab, post-surgery or not post-surgery, whatever it looks like. I just got to continue to push myself and get better.
That's kind of the advanced self-awareness we've come to know in our conversations through the years, man. Can we go backwards for a second? How did it happen? Was it just like normal football-related workouts for you in the offseason?
Oh, you're talking about the first one? Yeah, I was just doing releases with some receivers. So, I mean, again, I did it on, I think, Monday before we had a report. I'm not sure. It might have been like the 14th, 15th or something like that, before we had a report in July. just doing really routine releases. I mean, I was doing them pretty much all off season, and then even beforehand, I did one a few reps before that, and we were doing like four or five back to backs. So I had just did one, and then I was doing my second one, and then I just was playing defense, and sure enough, I felt the pop, and then it was done. It kind of happened that quick.
And then what a lot of people are wondering is like, were you 100%? Were you ready this past week, or was it, do you feel like you tried to rush it a little bit, or the team tried to rush it, that kind of thing?
I wouldn't say there was any rushing involved. I think it was definitely a sense of urgency, I would say, to get back, but definitely no rushing and doing anything reckless. But I would just say I felt comfortable playing. I mean, I know if I didn't feel comfortable, I wouldn't have played no matter what anybody was saying. But I think for me, I definitely pushed myself good enough. I felt strong. I felt really good during practice. Of course, there was some soreness and things like that. But to me, I mean, that comes with increasing the volume and things like that. So really heading into the game, I felt really good. I wouldn't take the decision back to playing the game.
Going back to like this team being put together, the coaching staff being put together, knowing that you were going to get out there and play yesterday, what was exciting you about playing with Dennis Allen?
In what regard?
Like as a player, like what about what he does defensively suited you as a player and had you wanting to be back on that field?
I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, I wanted to be on the field no matter who's the damn coach. So, I mean, it's kind of hard to answer from that perspective. But I would definitely say just having opportunities to make plays. Of course, I think being put in more coverage situation where you got to cover your guy, where you have to match certain things, even on the third down, being put in position to be able to play certain routes, jump and undercut routes like that. I think it's the creativity that I would say draws you to wanting to play in the defense, for sure. I think for me too, being able to see the plays and see certain things where it's like, okay, I can see how that's going to translate in the game. Definitely would have wanted more opportunities under that style of defense, under that style of play calling. But again, it didn't work out. But there's definitely plenty of ample opportunities to make plays in this defense.
At one point, you were blitzing, and Tyreek was on Amon-Ra St. Brown. I'm not gonna lie, a lot of us on the couch, because we know a lot of stuff on the couch, man. We're smart as hell. We're like, why isn't Jalen on Amon-Ra St. Brown? Like, we've talked about traveling with the number one wide receiver before. Was that the plan at all yesterday, or no?
No, that wasn't the plan. I think too. I mean, on that one, we were running like a simulated cover two. So I mean, Tariq was in the half. It wasn't like a man-to-man situation either way on that. But I think it was just for us, just trying to get comfortable. Because I mean, again, I've only had 1 week of practice, and even then, it was a shorter week off the Monday night. So I mean, we really only had two practices. So kind of just trying to keep it regular, as far as just play one side and go from there. And then throughout the season, throughout time, and getting familiar and letting me get really my bearings as far as playing with this defense, playing in football game. Anyway, that was my first time even playing in full pads. I mean, I had to go take my full pads and go hit a dang one-man sled to try to get prepared for the physical side of it. So, I mean, there's a lot of factors that went into the decision to just stay in left and right.
I know that you're worried about you, as you should be, because any time that you have to face a decision of rehab or surgery, like, that's hard. I am wondering what you think that the defense overall could do better, and what did Detroit do well yesterday that put them that far ahead of you guys?
What can we do better? I honestly think it's just more so just focusing on what we got to do. And I think as simple as that may sound, I feel like when you get out there and the guns are blazing and trying to make plays and things aren't going a certain way, and it's like you want to do this and do that, it's like that's at that time, that's where you got to fight the urge to try to go force a play and make a play. And it's just, let me just do my job and do my assignment. And I feel like all the big plays as we went over it, all the big plays weren't really just I would say like good calls or anything like that on their end. And that, and at the time it feels like, dang, they got our number, but it's like, nah, we got our own number. Like, we're not guarding the people we're supposed to guard. We're not connecting to routes that we're supposed to connect to. We're not communicating who's doing what, who's taking who's taking who on certain motions. We're not lined up in the right spots, and they beat capitalize and beat us on all of those things that we messed up on. So, I mean, I think it was good on their end for sure for capitalizing on our mistakes, but it was really bad ball on our end throughout that game.
Man. Yeah, it's interesting because you try to figure out from our spot, like, what's coaching, what's the injuries, what's communication, like how much is on the players? How much is on the players? Because that's a rough defensive effort overall. In fact, it's the roughest one ever. Did you know that, Jay? It's
I was about to say, I know that was the worst one since I've been here.
Yeah. Well, by average yards per play, 8.81 yards per play.
Like 8 something, yeah.
Yeah. It's the highest average the Bears have allowed in franchise history. It's crazy.
God dang. I didn't know that.
I know. So it's like, so how much of that is on the players is what we're trying to figure out, you know?
I would say a lot of it was on us. Honestly speaking, I think it was probably, of course, I mean, it's never going to be a perfect game, but I thought there was probably 2, maybe 3 calls that DA probably would have wanted. One would have wanted back, but I mean, for the most part, it was just us not doing what we're supposed to do. And I feel like, and that was the thing too with us. It's like, it's not about them catching the ball. I think it's more so how it looks, or it's not them getting certain yardage. It's just more so about how it looks. And it's like, if we can just, I don't even want to say do our job, because that sounds so like simple, but it's like, if we can just focus on our guy, because I mean, every time you line up, you have a guy that you're supposed to read, you have a guy that you're supposed to guard, you have a guy you're supposed to attach to and things like that. So it's like, if we can just focus really on that better in the moment and not trying to go force things and make things happen, it's like, just worry about what you got. If we're in man, just worry about your guy in man. If we're in zone, just worry about the guy that comes to you and things like that. It was really, really simple from that way. But in the moment, a lot of guys trying to do things outside of themselves.
What's your opinion on whether or not a hurt player should be around the facility?
A hurt player should be around.
Like, if you go on IR, are you okay with, or do you want to be in the facility, or is it better for you to stay away?
I'm never going to say it's better for me not to be involved. So I think there's definitely value that I can always add, but I think too it depends on the situation. In being on IR, I think of course if you're looking to return back in 5 weeks, then I think you should definitely be in the building, because again, your time's coming. You need that time to continue to learn a playbook and things like that. I feel like situation where season might be ending, I think it's almost best for that player to then go do what they need to do to get healthy, to get back right. And then also to that same extent, there's also that thing of helping the mentality of being there to help the team and help the room in whatever way you can. So I think everybody's situation is different. Everybody's impact is different. So, I mean, there's plenty of reasons why you would want a guy there, and there's plenty of reasons why you may want him to take that time to himself.
Yeah, it's an understandable answer. I mean, sort of to recap from the beginning and kind of what you sort of alluded to, it's like a short IR stint is possible and out for the season is possible, right? Both those options are still on the table depending on what you and the doctors decide to do.
I would say so. I feel like it's kind of tricky right now to honestly give a definitive answer, but I would definitely say trying to figure out what's the best move long term, because I feel like there's, you don't want it to keep happening. Of course, rehab and did all that for 8 weeks and came back and played a quarter and a half and something happened. So, I mean, now that there's more damage to an area, it's like, how much do you want to try to push through before you go get it? And then I feel like, even if it does work until November and then I get hurt, now it's like pushing surgery back until November, December. I mean, there's plenty of things that you can try to do. And I mean, there's no right or wrong answer. I think it's just really what's in the best interest, first and foremost, for myself, and then for the team after that.
You've always been such a team guy. Is it hard to be in a place where you might have to make a decision that's primarily a Jalen decision instead of a Bears decision?
I wouldn't even say that this is that. I mean, sure, it's not like I don't have damage done to my body. Like, I haven't had muscles and ligaments already damaged and messed up. So, I mean, I wouldn't even say it's a Jalen decision per se, I think, too. I mean, I don't want to get out there in the game and I'm hurting the team because I can't play the way that everybody knows I can play. So I don't think it's just as simple as a Jalen decision. I think it, of course, starts with me because it's my body, of course. But at the end of the day, the Bears invested a lot in me, and they want to get their return. And I know they can't get all of their return with a hurt Jalen. So
yeah.
I think for everybody's sake, it's best for me to get whatever it needs fixed or figure out the best way to get it fixed and then go from there. So there's longevity in their investment in my productivity.
Yeah, it was categorized as a new injury, and I think you answered it at the top. It's complex. Like, it's a different part of the groin that got hurt. So maybe it was the bottom, now it's the top. So it is technically new, right?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I think in hindsight, when I did it, it kind of felt the same, but as kind of the pain meds wore off, I wasn't on the tour at all and things like that. It was like, nah, this feels a little different. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely not the same thing, same area, same things affected, but it's definitely a different area.
Is J.J. McCarthy any good? He looked bad last night, looked good last week against us. We're trying to figure that out, Jalen.
He looked good for one quarter. So, I mean, he's trying to get back to that fourth quarter, J.J., and throughout all the quarters. So, I mean, I think just overall, there's learning pains and things like that. I mean, there's plenty of guys that went through it. I don't want him to be good of course, for selfish reasons, but I'm sure he'll find a way to be successful in some way, shape, or form.
Jalen, we appreciate you. Get better. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, indeed. You guys have a good one. Good talking to you.
You too.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.